We are continuing our series in the book of Mark, so I'm going to read the passage for this morning. If you have your Bibles, you can get those out. Otherwise, we will put it up here on the screen for you. We are in Mark 7, beginning with verse 24. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. "First, let the children eat all they want," he told her, "for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." "Lord," she replied, "even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he told her, "For such a reply, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." She went home and found her daughter lying on the bed and the demon gone. Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon, down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on him. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, "Ephphatha," which means "be opened." At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. "He has done everything well," they said. "He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak." This is the reading of God's word.
All right. So we're going through Mark. And today I want to go through both these stories, kind of verse by verse for a little while. And then at the end, say, so what? What are we supposed to take from it? What does this say to our world today and all that's going on in it? What does it say to us? Mostly, as I've been thinking about this story for the last few weeks, I've really been stuck on both on the stories, but I've really been stuck on the first story, on Jesus' interaction with this woman who's got a little daughter, a little child, who is tormented by evil. And Jesus' response to her seems to be like, well, you know, you matter less. You know, you let her, you're like a dog compared to children. I'm just like, what's going on, Jesus? Like, why are you doing that? So why is that how he responds to her? And then the other thing that is striking is she gives a response and he says, "For such a reply, your daughter's okay. Because you answered the way you answered, your daughter's okay." And so first of all, I think, was Jesus going to heal her anyway? But then why did he say it that way? Why did he say, because of the way you answered, that's why your daughter's healed? And then what about her answer? Is what he liked. What would have happened if she just took what seemed to be what he was saying? "No, I'm busy. I'm focused on other people right now. I can't focus on you." And she just said, "Okay." Would he still have healed her daughter? When I study the Bible, I try to ask questions. And I think that that's important, that instead of what's the first thing, this means this to me, this means this, what do I not understand? What, after doing this for a year, going to 13 years of Christian schooling, being in ministry for 30 years, and I'm reading a passage and I'm still like, I don't know. I don't think I understand it. A lot of times, if I'll stick with that and keep asking questions, that's when God gives me things that I didn't understand before and helps me understand better. And so I hope that that kind of happens for all of us today. I don't think I have all the answers to these questions, but I do think as we wrestle with them, I'm hopeful and prayerful that he'll speak to us. probably speak different things to different people through his word. So may that be so. Okay, let's go to back to the start, chapter 7, verse 24. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. One of the things that's going to occur multiple times today is that we're going to get insight from this passage that we wouldn't normally get if we were just focused on it. Like, it's helpful that the Bible, the English translations of the Bible we have, a lot of them have headings like this one. Jesus honors a Syrophoenician woman's faith, although that's, you know, Syrophoenician, you might just kind of space out once you're using words that big. But it's helpful that they're broken into stories. And so sometimes I will get, and I'll look just at the story. I'll pick it up and I'll look just at the story. And even like, I'll just look at those few verses. And that's an okay thing to do. But since we've started going through Mark months ago, and we're going to go through the whole thing, and we're not skipping any spots, we have the benefit of seeing, like, how does this story connect to the stories before it? How does this story connect to the things that keep coming up in Mark? And so the fact that Jesus left the place and went to Tyre, this is the only recorded time that he's like leaving the Israel boundaries nations and going somewhere else and didn't want anyone to bother him. Well, we know that coming from, those of us who've been going through Mark know that coming from ahead of this was that Jesus is exhausted with ministry and tried to get away with his disciples, and then all of a sudden thousands of people come, and out of his compassion he can't leave them, and so he ministers some more, feeds the 5,000. He is exhausted again. He gets in a boat. We're going to get to the other side. We're going to go to the other side, and then there's people there again, and he's ministering again, and then there's conflict happening again. That's what he's fresh coming out of. So now he can't go anywhere. So he goes miles and miles and miles to where no one would expect the Jewish man to go, and he tries to hide out in a house, but it's still made known. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. So part of what's going on with the dog conversation has to do with this woman is a Gentile, not a Jew. So I'll explain more of that in a bit. But part of the context is Jesus is trying to get away because he's a human being. He's fully God, but he's a human being. So he gets tired. He gets surprised. He gets angry. He gets sad. He has emotions. He has it. He's human. And he knows, I need some space to be able to do what I'm going to do moving forward. I've got a mission, and it's to this people at this time and this place. And yet, here comes a woman. And so with that in mind, this is what his response is to a woman begging him to help his daughter. First, let the children eat all they want, he told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. So if you read commentaries on this, one of the things that they will say is that this is Jesus pointing to, like if you were to read in Romans, salvation came first for the Jews, then for the Gentiles. Or, you know, the Jews, Jesus came first there because it's from the Jews that the rest of the nations would hear about Jesus. And so his priority, if you read the Matthew account of this story, the first thing he says is, I've come for the lost sheep of Israel. I can't be everywhere at once. This is the order of things as they're supposed to happen. I am focused here on Israel. And so that is what he's saying. The issue with that, although there's some, you know, truth to that, this is a Gentile woman. She wouldn't understand any of that. So is that really the main point he's making, even if that's something that we could maybe? I don't think so. So another aspect of this could be that Jews would refer to Gentiles in a derogatory manner as dogs. And so he is saying what his disciples are thinking. Because again, in the Matthew account of this story, his disciples say, send her away. We'll get her out, rid of her. We'll get her out of here. Like, they're not supposed to be in the same house. If we look at what they were talking about in the passage right before this, Jesus is talking to religious leaders, religious people, people who really know the Old Testament Bible. That's all they've got at this point. They really know it. And they're getting in an argument about what's clean and what's unclean. What is clean versus what is unclean? They aren't doing the ceremonial things, so they're going to be unclean. They're going to be separate. They're going to be not fit for being with God. And if you get around unclean things, if you do unclean things, then you're not fit for being around God, and that's what the religious people were emphasizing. But they were doing it in sort of like this external way, and Jesus saying it's about your heart, where your heart is at, that makes a person clean or unclean. Not about doing all the right things or if you've been around someone. And so we are still picking up on this idea of Gentiles are unclean. And if you're in the same house, if you eat a meal with a Gentile person as a Jewish person at that time, you're thought to be unclean, can't be around those dogs. And so maybe, I don't know, maybe Jesus is referring to things as his disciples around him would understand it. We're in the stretch of Mark that we're talking about his parables and his power, Jesus' parables and his power, the stories he's telling. The stories, and he gives these pictures, and then, okay, now we're going to get understanding. Instead of saying exactly what he thinks, which we still don't know, what did he think about this woman coming? Did he really, like, I really wish I had space? Was this all a big setup and he knew what was going to happen? We don't know, but he gives a story. And now the disciples and this woman are left to say, like, what does this picture mean? That the bread doesn't go to the dogs, it goes to the kids. Next verse, verse 28. Lord, she replied, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. I mean, Jesus, I guess, didn't have kids. I don't know if you've ever seen kids in a high chair with food and a dog. Where's that food going? Hey, that's fun. Hey. I mean, I'm not sure that's what is going on here, but there's a way in which her response is to say, here's what Jesus says. Jesus is talking about a table and bread, and kids, and dogs. And clearly, I'm being referred to as the dog. And so I'm going to respond to him from the perspective of the dog. And I'm going to say, yeah, you've got to do what you got to do for those kids. But it's still, there's still enough that some of it could fall to me, right? You're good enough. You have enough. You're able enough. And maybe your story itself is opening the door that you are interested. If I read this story, or if I hear Jesus' response in that example, I think, oh, well, I guess I'm not supposed to be here. I best I better go. And this woman thinks, maybe he's saying yes. And Jesus' response to her response. Then he told her, for such a reply you may go. The demon has left your daughter. She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. I was just saying, this is the second to last Sunday that we're kind of marking as pictures and power, where we've been talking about Jesus' power things, but also parables he told, the pictures, the stories. This is the first time that someone understood his parable before he explained it. So he's with his disciples, and he tells a story, and it's just like a bunch of people just leave, and they're, we don't know what they take of it. And then the disciples go, we don't get it. Can you tell us? And then he'll say, you don't get it? Okay, and he explains it. I mean, it happened in the very last, just verses ago. It happened again. And he says, are you so dull? Do you really not get it? And now here's a woman who hasn't been around him, who hasn't heard his teachings, who isn't even Jewish, who doesn't, and yet she gets it. She gets it, who he is. She gets what he's trying to say. She sees it and she understands it. And in that, Jesus responds. It's a two-way, I think he's delighted in this. I kind of wonder if this was a playful thing that he's playing a joke on the disciples. His what he said. Oh, the way this woman is coming in, what I see in her, she's going to get it. And this will help them. Okay, that's the first story. Going to the second story. Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon, down to the Sea of the Galilee, into the region of the Decapolis, region of 10 cities. There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on him. This is a pretty long journey from where he was just at. Earlier, he had been at the one time we have him in this region of 10 marked by 10 cities, was when he cast demons out, the legion of demons, the multitude of demons out of a man, was in this area. And then the people were so freaked out by what happened, they asked him, please leave. And so he left. That's the last time. Well, now he's back in that area. I don't know about the exact same spot, but he's in that region. And what we know about that region from history is that it's got Jewish people in it and non-Jewish people in it. It wasn't particularly the most robust followers of the Jewish religion, those that were Jews, but they were there. But this doesn't say whether the people who brought him were Jews or Gentiles. And why I bring that up is because we were just talking about, okay, this is a Gentile response. Now, is this a Gentile response or is this a Jewish response? Well, I think the point of not telling us which is that it's a human response. This is what's available to everybody. This is how anybody could respond. This is how you can respond. This is how I can respond. So they came with a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged Jesus to place his hand on them. Now, to place his hand on him, that would say in their time, to heal, you'd put your hands on someone to heal them or bless them. If you were considered a priest, a holy person, to heal them or to bless them. They're coming for healing or for blessing or for both. And the man was deaf, but he could hardly talk. What I think that might mean, two of my best friends growing up, parents were both deaf. And I was in their house all kinds of times, spend the night in their house tons of times. It was a great place to spend the night because, you know, they would, I remember the very first time I spent the night at their house, and we're up too late. It's like 1 a.m. And one of my friends just goes, "Bah!" Like, you could wake your, oh no, you won't. Okay. But they could feel vibrations. I mean, all of a sudden, oh, there they are. We still got busted. But anyway, when they would do their sign language things, they would sometimes talk. And sometimes when they were trying to get attention and they aren't in the same room, they would talk. But my friends' names were Andy and Ben. Andy, Andy, Bean, Bean. They couldn't hear how they were sounding. They couldn't hear how it's supposed to sound from other people. But they... at least one of them had hearing originally, and so they could kind of get there. So he could hardly talk. I'm guessing it's something like that. Verse 33, after Jesus took him aside away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. We have been working with our prayer ministry training about spitting. No, just kidding. I don't get, hey, guess what? In 2 weeks, another story where Jesus is going to heal somebody and spits again. So there's something to it, but we haven't figured out, so we don't do it. So anyway, you know, what's Jesus doing with this guy? What, this poor guy, he doesn't know what's going on. He's sticking his fingers in his ears and spitting. Or because the man can't understand talking, is Jesus saying, this one, I'm going to open him up. I'm going to open him up. I still don't get the spit. I'm not going to. But maybe he's communicating to, like, this is what I'm going to do. This one. Like, he could have just done it right there. I mean, he delivered the little girl from a demon without even going there. But here, he takes the person away from the crowd. He's not a magician, as they would have seen people, like, doing their folk religion. It's personal. He is about the relationship. He could have just healed that. Sure, I'll heal your daughter. Instead, I'm going to have an interaction with you. I want you to have a relationship with God. I want you to know I see. I'm not some magic thing and now I'm moving on to the next thing. I see you. I understand you. I'm getting down with you. He looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, Ephphatha, which means be opened. At this the man's ears were opened, His tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus, what would it be like to be totally in touch with goodness, to be able to totally operate as things are supposed to operate, and be plunged into our world with the sickness, the sadness, the anger, the evil, the pain, and just have it brought to you over and over again? I mean, it's exhausting for us. It's exhausting for him. And then this healing comes. And he prays. Then what earth is supposed to look like, heaven coming to earth, is what happens. Two more verses. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone. But the more he did so, the more people kept talking about it. In our world of like, look at me, social media. This is how I'm presenting. Can I get many more likes? Can I get more followers? Can I get more bigger platform? All of that. Jesus is so the opposite of that. Constantly. Constantly. Don't tell anyone. Let's go do this in private. I'm going to do this in a quiet place. Let's go find a quiet place. It is instructive to what it means to be a healthy human being. That you are motivated not by how many people can see me, how many people will say great about me, how many people, but like, how can I stay quiet, hidden, personal, loving, kind? So people were overwhelmed with amazement. Funny, I wonder if the people who brought them were overwhelmed. I guess I was thinking like maybe they were even surprised, but maybe this is just the people beyond them. He has done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. Now, Camille told me, I didn't know this, but she told me that this mute, word for, or is it deaf? Can you tell me again? Thank you, deaf, got it. The word that they used for deaf here in the Greek, in the original language, it's the only time it's used here. There's other deaf people and other deaf stories, but this is the only time it's used here. And in the Greek version of the Old Testament's originally in Hebrew, but there's a Greek translation, the Septuagint, Isaiah 35 is the only time that that same word is used anywhere else in the whole Bible. And many commentators pointed that this is to Isaiah 35. Among other things, what Isaiah 35 is talking about is this is what the Messiah will look like. And so these people, maybe kind of religious, unreligious, they aren't necessarily saying he is the Messiah, but they are saying things that resemble, that are getting close to, this is who he is. Why do I say that? Because we have, you know, if I was just normally giving sermons, we probably wouldn't give these sermons back to back, but because we're trying to get through the entire book of Mark in a year, just put some stories together, and I don't think it's an accident to look at these together. I don't think it's an accident even that Mark has them side by side for comparisons and contrast's sake. So here's a woman who sees and understands Jesus' parable, his picture, a song. And she sees him and she's able to speak well. Here are people who can't hear, and then he can hear, and then he can speak well. And the people weren't expecting it. They're amazed. They're overwhelmed. And now they're speaking well. Leading up to this, nobody knows who he is. Nobody's getting it right. It'll be a couple more weeks, and we're going to get to the first time if someone says, you're the Messiah. Nobody's catching it. But it's getting closer as people can see more clearly and hear more clearly than they can speak more clearly. When they can't, when they don't hear clearly, then what we say might be okay. But not as good as if we could hear and see Jesus clearly. And so it's just striking if you go through this chapter 7 as a whole. You've got Pharisees, religious leaders coming from Jerusalem. These are top-level people. They're into politics, a lot of them, and they're into religion, and they've got it all together, and they come out and they can't see him. They don't want to listen to him, those particular people. But then you've got other religious people. These disciples, they want to, but they don't understand. He tells us they don't get it. Not because they don't want to. And so he's helping them along. But then you get to a woman who they think she doesn't count, the religious leaders. She's not a Jew. She's not a man. She's not from here. She's got evil in her house. It must be her fault. All of this, that's what they would say. And she sees. And she speaks well. And she understands. And you got a deaf man again, and they're thinking like, he must be cursed. God must not be for him. They live in Decapolis, not in Jerusalem. They live the further. And he comes and he pops it open, and the people who brought him, who wanted the blessing, they're saying things. He does all things. Well, they are starting to see Jesus more clearly and understand him more clearly. So it's with that in mind that I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about the events of our nation this week. So Charlie Kirk's assassination is very sad, is a tragedy, is difficult on so many levels. And what I've seen since it is I've seen people who, and talked with in person, people who have been impacted, influenced, just have so much admiration for Charlie Kirk, who are in grieving mode and who are processing that in an honest, healthy way. I have seen and heard from people who are all with Charlie Kirk, very supportive of his style, and out of pain, out of whatever, there's a lot of venom going towards people who don't agree with them politically. I have seen people who don't agree with Charlie Kirk, don't think that he was doing or saying the right things, speak with compassion, with tenderness, with humanity about his loss. I've seen people and read people, watched the videos of people who don't agree with Charlie Kirk and have said things that are just abhorrent in light of what's happened. I don't think I could say anything about Charlie Kirk without upsetting someone here in this room based on what I've seen all the responses be. So I want to acknowledge it, but instead of thinking that I have something to say about it, I'd like to say something about the responses, but in a way to try to even be more careful, I'm going to talk about an interview I listened to the day before Charlie Kirk died. So this doesn't have to do with what's happened since. This is just like, this is my observation before, and what I really want to talk to, or who I really want to talk to, is myself and others who say we're followers of Jesus, to say, how well are we hearing? How well are we listening? How well are we seeing people? How are we doing in that? So in this interview, the person doing the interview is not a believer. The person being interviewed is a believer, is very influential in our world. As they're having a conversation, things that come up, this person who's being interviewed brings up their faith multiple times. They're clear, they are a genuine believer in Jesus. Their faith is important to them, and they're trying to bring that into the world in which they have influence. Also clear, this person is coming from a good heart, is trying to be kind to all people. That comes up. I mean, the viewer said it, the person being interviewed said it. But at one point, an issue comes up, and the interviewer, the non-Christian, I think agnostic from what I can tell, says, why do you have to talk about that with this issue? And then the non-Christian says, wouldn't this be a situation where you, and he's kind of stumbling forwards, you know, turn the other cheek? And the Christian says, no, because the other side is doing these things. The other side is doing, and if we just let that go and don't point out they're doing those things, and the interviewer is, I know, but couldn't we do something new, create something new, like do it a different way instead of doing it the same way they're doing it? I agree, they are doing it, and that is wrong, but why would you do the same thing? Because if we don't do it, just doubles down. If we don't do it, then nobody's going to know that this is the way they're doing it, so we have to do it the same way because that shows that they're doing it that way. And he said, oh, okay, well, I just, you know, and he brought up turn the other cheek a couple times, and then he just kind of said, okay, well, let's I was just wondering, I'll move on. And the person says, like, I just want to say one more time. I just want to challenge you. We have to do it this way. We have to point out this way. And so it was jarring for me because the non-believer is quoting Jesus' words, and this person may have been right about the way they're going about it and the methods for change or whatever, I don't know. But you would at least say, yes, those are Jesus' words. Or yes, that is something we're going to do in life, and this is why we would do it differently in this. But instead, it was like, could not hear Jesus' words. Again, this is a genuine, this is a wonderful person, genuine believer, done so many good things. But there's some things that get a hold, and now we can't hear. The last couple weeks, I've been reading a memoir about an evangelical minister who, I mean, did all kinds of missionary support things, did a walk raising money across the country for kids and or families in Mexico living in dumps. I mean, this guy is radical. Worked with addicts, he gives his whole life to it. And then got really involved in the abortion movement, and then started to get involved more in politics, and then left being a pastor, so that because in his mind, I can evangelize the most powerful people and that would change the world. Just very sincere. And this is in the 90s, he's doing all this, and he meets all the people. He's with all the people. When he's not in Washington, D.C., on the weekends, he goes to speak in churches. And that's where he raises money. And what he's advised to do is whenever you speak in churches, make sure you speak in a way that would create fear and anger because people will give more. Fear and anger so that people will give more so he can have more money, so he can make more change to make people more like Jesus in the epicenter of the world. We're going to use fear and anger so that people can come to the one who tells us, do not be afraid. Who starts his Sermon on the Mount and says, the first thing we got to get straight, don't be angry. Don't have contempt for people. Don't look down on them and dehumanize them. Don't say, you fool, raca. Don't talk about them vulgarly and coarsely. We have people in our world on both sides of the mix who Christian. But sometimes we're not hearing, but Jesus says these things about how we should do it. Can't hear, can't see. And so what comes out? What happens to our hearts? Now, if I stop there, I'm really missing the mark. Because it's just not where I'm at right now in life I shouldn't say that. I get a little sucked up in it. I mean, I watch this stuff and I get mad when I so after watching a lot of it, partially just because I was trying to figure out how does this, what we're talking about, fit into what's going on? But yesterday, none of it. Yesterday I got back to looking to and listening to Jesus. And the thing that's in both of these stories is begging. It's begging. She falls at his feet and begs, please heal my daughter. They come to Jesus with the deaf man begging, please put your hands on him. We have seen it throughout chapter 2 The man falls at his feet, begging, if you're willing, you can make me clean. He says, I'm willing. He makes him clean. The get lowered at his feet, the paralyzed man. Your sins are forgiven. Get up, take up your mat, and walk. The man comes who's full of demons and evil, and he falls at his feet. Later begs him, let me stay with you. And Jesus restores him. And then right after that, a religious leader comes and falls at his feet. My little girl is dying. Begs him, please come in. And he heals. But he doesn't heal until on the way, a woman gets healed who's been outcast. She comes and falls at his feet. And he says, daughter, your faith has healed you. What you see over and over again is this sort of desperation. Like, and I'm telling you, that's what I feel, not just for our world, but for myself. Because I don't hear clearly just on my own. I don't see clearly on my own. I'm easily angered. I think I'm right about things. I become the very kind of person I dislike. And I just want to say, Jesus, you alone can change my heart. And I'm not going to be any good at helping anybody else's heart to change if you don't change my heart. So please change my heart. And one of the beauties of this is that one of the things that Jesus, I think, wants to help us see, wants to help us hear, wants us to understand more rightly, is how he feels about us. So I don't know how they viewed dogs back then. And so I'm not going to pretend to say that what I'm about to say is the meaning of this little parable thing. There's a lot of mystery still in that. But if you can bring up the first picture, on that. That's Mabel. That's our dog, Mabel. It's not the best capture of it, but every day at our house when we're eating, we get Mabel looking up at us. A lot of intensity. A lot of openness. Very pretty. Very cute. Next picture. That's Archie. Also, very motivated by food. When Jesus told this story, the translation is little dog, like puppy. He could have used a different word for dog. The little dog, the little dog, the kind of dog that you would have at your table. Next picture is Mabel as a puppy. I'm going to kick that thing? Or am I going to be like, here's your cheeseburger? We once upon a time had another little dog, if you can go to the next picture. That's Archie. In the next picture you see, we went and picked him up. There's Camille when she has Archie. Jesus said, you know, you don't take the bread and give it to the dogs. Well, you might if you have Archie when he's a puppy. Next picture, Archie. He's cute. And there's a woman who listens to a story and has external circumstances in her life. And instead of thinking, he must be rejecting me, God must hate me, nothing's going to change, says, oh, puppy? And she sees clearly. And she sees clearly. One last picture on our way back from bringing Archie home. Oh, no, that's this morning. And he's still just like, you know, I'm at your feet, Master. I'm attentive to you. There's the last picture. He doesn't look like that anymore. He's becoming a young man. And his mom and I love him. We really love him. And the truth is, Jesus was accomplishing something in that story. But he says, we have the rights because of him. He gives us the rights to become children of God. We aren't the dogs around the table. We're the kids he loves. He doesn't just give us crumbs. He doesn't just give us bread. He is the bread of life. He gave us himself on the cross to say, I want nothing back from you. I want the very best for you. That's what I want you to be able to see. That's what I want you to be able to hear. You are loved. You are loved. The world is hard. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of sadness. Take heart. I have overcome the world. So don't be afraid. Don't be angry. Come and follow me. Come and follow me. Let's pray. God, we acknowledge that we don't see everything clearly. We don't understand everything clearly. We don't hear you clearly, and a lot of times we aren't even trying to listen to you. We've got too much other things coming before our minds or into our ears. We just acknowledge that. And yet we still say a lot of stuff as if we knew more than we really know. As if we were the judge and not you. So forgive us where we need forgiveness. But most of all this morning, pray epiphtha. Be opened in this room, God. Would you open things in it? Would you open our hearts to you and our minds to you and our ears to you and our eyes to you that we could understand you better? We could see you, who you are, and what you've done for us, but especially we could see how much you care about us and love us. We could see ourselves more as you see us, with the love and tenderness, delight that you see us. So pray as we end these songs, it would be you opening things up, opening up things from heaven, healing and blessing, especially knowing you more clearly, would come even in these moments, just a few moments of focusing on you. We pray it. Amen.